From the Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona, you're listening to Empowering Women, brought to you by the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host, alongside Tara Alves. Tara?
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
You are sounding great. I don't know about me, but you are.
Really? Because I feel a little echo in my ear right now.
Oh, you do? You feel a little echo? That's great. Just sort of blowing a little bit on your ear there. Yeah, I don't hear an echo.
Well, I don't know. We'll go forward.
Yeah, we will indeed. And this is Empowering Women, a great show. And, of course, it's a show that honors women from all walks of life, women in all professions, women who are moms, women who fall under the radar and not getting the recognition they deserve. That's why this show is here right now, and I think this is a very, very important show.
Yes, it is. The timing is right, and we say it every show. Women need to be recognized for the things they're doing. And it's not just women that are under the radar. It's, it's people doing your everyday living that we don't recognize, everyday successes, and women doing inspiring things, and women who have done monumentally successful things, in the world that we just want to recognize.
There's no doubt about it, and I think it's also about appreciation, and I think that's really, really important, because I don't think women get enough appreciation, actually, and they certainly don't get enough pay. It's still not equal pay, men and women. And I think that's really very critical. So this is a show that's going to create more awareness for the general public, for men, for women as well.
Yes.
And it is America. Right?
It is.
It should be equal treatment. Everyone have the same opportunities. I mean, there's different skill levels, but that means sometimes women would get paid more than men, too, because they might, in that particular position, have a better skill set than a man, vice versa sometimes. That's how it should happen, based on skill, not based on what sex you are.
But it's not there yet. There's still the good old boys club, and you feel it as a woman in some situations. You really do encounter those situations where there's a difference in how we're viewed and treated, and you have to kind of earn your right sometimes, whereas I don't think men have to as much.
So tell us about that, the good old boys club.
I mean,
where do you see it? Do you see it in the workplace?
Yes.
Do you see it in social type of outings too?
I think it's out. It's just in general, it's out there. When I was in more of the corporate world, I felt more of it, of course. even when I was in the new home sales industry, where now I'm an independent realtor, so I'm self-employed. But when I worked with men that have been in the industry for this many years, and they had other men they were supporting. So if somebody were going to get, let's say, the new good community, was it the woman first? I didn't think so. I think I saw it. You could see it. There was a little bit of a, hey, it's the man. He has to take care of his family. Well, I mean, in my position, I am the man of the house. I'm the man.
You're the man
woman
of the house.
I'm the woman of the house. I'm the man of. I mean, I have to do. So I've always kind of felt like, well, that's not fair.
No.
I guess that's why a person like me is self-employed, because the harder you work, the better you do. You can control that, where you don't have to deal with that influence of somebody saying, "You go here. You do this. You do that. You get paid this." You can control that more.
Yeah, I think that's very, very important to at least create the awareness. I don't know what it's going to take. I think cultural shifts might be the issue. And why don't we take a quick break and let's talk a few minutes about the cultural changes that probably are coming up. Then we have a very, very special guest coming up in about 5 minutes, Melissa Llewellyn, the head ASU golf coach.
Yes, I'm so excited, that, especially I went to ASU.
Oh, see, that's going to even be better. You may take up golf. And then this is Empowering Women.
Melissa has been the ASU women's golf coach for 14 years, taking them to their highest level of success in the history. 12 straight NCAA postseason appearances, 2 Pac-10 titles, NCAA team championships in 2009, amongst many other accolades. And in 2014, Melissa was inducted into the Women's Golf Coaches Hall of Fame. And interestingly, her mother was also inducted back in 1988. So what an amazing family and story that you have accomplished what you have.
And Melissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Happy to be able to join you.
This is great. Well, you know, I am a big sports fan. We have sports shows also on the air, and golf is so popular, especially in Arizona, because I guess it's sort of the golf capital of the world. Is that how you see it too?
Oh, absolutely. This is, this is why we spend so much money to overseed with ryegrass in October. So when the visitors come in the wintertime, they want to see green grass, and we've got green grass and great weather and great golf courses, and it's kind of like a golfer's paradise.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think Florida has some great, golf courses as well. But you know, we were talking just before you got on, you came on the air. And, of course, this is Empowering Women show. And, you know, we're talking about cultural changes over the years. And I'm really curious about how golf, women in golf, has changed over the years. I mean, your mom was really a pioneer in the days when, I think the golf was mainly for men. And, by the way, we did have Marilyn Smith. You may have heard of her, one of the 13
of
founders.
Course.
You know, she was on our show maybe 4 years ago. Delightful lady. But how have you seen it change over the years since maybe you started playing golf, maybe in your mother's day? How have you seen it change up till now?
Well, I actually have kind of because of the longevity of my mom being involved in college golf, before Title IX, I grew up watching, I think the superstar was Judy Rankin, and Judy, she just won everything and just, kind of hit it short, hit it down the middle, chipped and putted well, and that was about the game. And that was the women's game. And now if you go out and watch the women's game, even at the collegiate level and certainly the LPGA professional level, I mean, the athleticism, the speed, the power, combined with grace, I mean, it's just, girls are, have been given such an opportunity through Title IX. It's okay to be in sports. I mean, when my mom was asked to be a volunteer coach at Tulsa in year one of her career, my grandparents and my grandmother especially she wasn't exactly thrilled that my mom was going to be a coach, a women's coach. That had a pretty bad connotation at that time.
Wow.
So, yeah, things have really changed as far as acceptance. And the grace and the beauty and the beautiful femininity of athletics on the women's side, and I think that a lot of men would say they learned so much more from the LPGA because they have better fundamentals, which is absolutely true. But when they get out there and see them, they're like, "Oh my God, I had no idea I hit it this far."
Let me ask you this also: Was it helpful, you've heard, of course, I know, and maybe you've played against her, Annika Sörenstam, one of the, probably one of the best women golfers of all time. Would you see it that way too?
I would agree with that. And we're very blessed to have her mental coach, Pia Nielsen, is here in the Valley with Vision 54, and they're located at Talking Stick, and they do amazing seminars and 3-day schools that are a little different than your typical, what someone would think of a golf school, but, just really becoming helpful in bringing great play and respect to the women's game. I mean, I was watching some old footage the other day, a special about, you know, great moments in sports. And when Annika Sorenstam teed it up at the PGA event at Colonial. And, you know, it wasn't about empowering women, unfortunately. It was about challenging herself.
And that was my point. It actually was that event, because I remember specifically it was well publicized, the best women's golfer going to the PGA, or at least that tournament. And so it really wasn't, I mean, did that hurt or help? I mean, you said it was really about challenging yourself, but did that help the women's game, you think? Or was it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think she hit 3-wood off the tee, she just ripped it. And, you know, everyone was like, oh, my God, she did it. And she's like, I did it, you know, just to get off that first tee, all the buildup and, you know, kind of some controversy around it. Why is she doing this? And why is, you know, she's the best women's player, but why does she need to come to the PGA Tour? And, you know, a lot of questions, but and Pia helped her stay very focused on this was a personal challenge for herself.
Yeah.
It really, purely was nothing more than that. But the effect and the ripples that it had for getting young girls to turn their head and look and go, wow, she did that.
Right.
And now she's so, I don't know how much you know about what she's doing today, but she's a mother of 2 beautiful children. She's got the Annika Foundation, and she's absolutely giving back so much to the game and the development. She's got 3 junior tournaments around the world. One in Sweden, one in the U.S., and one in Asia.
Wow.
And then she's got the award for the Collegiate Player of the Year is the Annika Award, and it's finally up there with the Haskins Award with the men. And then she's, you know, still involved with the LPGA. So she's doing amazing things for stepping away from the game pretty early, honestly. But her impact on the game is tremendous.
Yeah, definitely. Now, stepping back a moment, how did you initially get into golf? Was this, I know, we obviously know your mother was a legend in the industry. What was that instrumental in you deciding to go into golf, or was it something you just had a passion for on your own?
Well, it was really the golf course kind of was the babysitter for my sister and I.
Oh.
I really liked driving the golf cart.
Uh-huh.
I really didn't care about golf, but you can only drive a golf cart for so long, and then you go, oh, okay, let me hit one. So I was never forced into it. And I was always fairly athletic, pretty decent hand-eye coordination, liked to run and jump and play tennis and swim and everything that a kid would do. And just because my parents introduced me to the game, I did start pretty young, probably 6 or 7, I guess,
when
I first hit a shot.
Yeah.
But, we would be we were very fortunate. I grew up in a country club environment, so basically get dropped off in the morning. And we did summer camp at the club, and we would do swimming, and then we do tennis, and then we do golf. And I was always just fun having little competitions. I felt like you could have more competitions around the chipping green and the putting green than any other place that you could try to swim to the edge or who could hold their breath the longest, but that was about it. And so golf kind of interested me that way, and it was fun. It was social, you had fun doing it.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of watching golf. I've never played, but I love to, it's just such an amazing sport to watch. And now you played in the LPGA for 11 years, correct?
Mm-hmm, correct.
And can you talk to us about some of the highlights of your career? And, there's so much, it's such a mind game, of what goes into it on a mental level and how that's impacted your life.
Well, I mean, when I was probably a junior in college is when I really made a solid decision that I was going to turn pro. And, as a young girl, I always thought, oh, I was going to be a professional golfer. And then you grow up and you're like, is this what I really want to do? And I put so much time and effort and loved the competition. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to go for it. And after I got my degree, I tried to qualify, was unsuccessful for my first stab at the LPGA Tour, and then I was able to go to the European Tour, and my sister took a leave of absence from her job, and we traveled around Europe, and she carried for me.
Oh, how fun.
And really just probably the best, that was probably the best year of my golf life, just getting to spend time with my sister and getting really close. And also being her boss, that was pretty fun.
Of course.
And then coming back and making it and qualifying and winning in my second year was certainly a highlight. But I'd have to say, and I won again in 93 with a JCPenney mixed team tournament where we an LPGA and a PGA Tour player paired together. Oh. And my partner and I, we won by four shots. We played so well. But, I probably remember, I mean, those are two moments that no one can ever take away from me, mm-hmm. and that I earned it, and mm-hmm. that's what I love about golf, is that what you put into it, you, mm-hmm. hopefully you get out of it, and not always, but I was fortunate enough to, have the putts drop and be a winner on the LPGA Tour. I mean, not everybody can say that, mm-hmm. and it's something I'm very proud of, but the majority of it was a struggle.
Yeah.
You always see the people on TV that are playing well.
Right.
And you forget about all those people that are, if you miss a cut, I mean, you just spent $2,000 on the week and you make nothing.
Yes.
It's difficult. That is challenging.
I mean, we traveled in the early days. I had a van and, packed it up and traveled and drove to the next stop and, mm-hmm. Try to get to Monday pro-ams to make a little extra cash. Mm-hmm. 1 year I missed 13 cuts in a row by one shot.
Wow.
It seems mathematically impossible, or the probability is impossible, but, just those were the painful, frustrating times. Lose your confidence. I mean, everything about performance is confidence, mm-hmm. and it's pretty easy for your self-esteem to get beat up out there, because when a game is your job, it can overtake you.
Yes.
And it can, the score, you become your score, and that's a very unhealthy place mm-hmm. to live. Mm-hmm. And I lived in that world, and it was very difficult on my psyche. But yet, I was like, when you played well, there was absolutely nothing better. So you just wait for those days that you played well.
Yeah.
And the tough part is that, the 80% of the players make 80% of the money in 20% of the tournaments.
Mm.
And so you're waiting for those six weeks that you play well.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's really what separates, a champion from the rest, right? That you can keep going through those struggles, because a lot of people can't. They would probably give up, I would think. Because I do not know golf, but I was married to somebody that was in a professional sport, that it was the same type of thing, that you would have years or months and weeks of bad, and then you would have these moments, and that's what everyone saw, and they didn't see all of the work and the grinding behind the scenes that you go through.
The blood, sweat, the tears.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think those are the things that I think make me a better coach based on my tough times.
Right.
And trying to help our young ladies deal with their emotions. And, there wasn't a lot of coaching or information about dealing with your emotions, while you're playing golf. And now it's a big topic. And it's a huge part of the game.
I would. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I can imagine that is, being a female, the things that come up for us, and that is a huge topic. I would really, I think that's something that you've been, I'm sure your adversities that you've gone through, like you said, have enabled you to be a stronger coach and be able to deal with these situations that people wouldn't think of. It. That's a really good point. The emotional aspect of it.
It's a huge deal. We spend a lot of time on it. You're out there for 4.5 to 5 hours competing, and and, you know, you can only focus for about 90 seconds at a time. Mm-hmm. And these kids are trying to focus, you know, the whole time and just kind of beating themselves up. Like, you know, it's like there's this expectation that when you hit a good shot that you're supposed to hit a good shot. And so they don't give themselves any credit.
Right.
You know, and it's like, man, you got to celebrate that good shot because this is the hardest skill game you can play. And just because it comes a little easier to you than somebody else, you still have to celebrate those good shots. And when it's bad, then you try to almost put no emotion to it. And that's challenging to do.
Mm-hmm. You know, the transition from a player to a coach is really a remarkable one. I mean, there's probably elements that are similar, but there's a whole lot of elements that I think are different. Just the psychology. And, of course, as a player, there's psychology involved, you know, your own mindset and so on. But to influence, to motivate others, create values for them, what's the priorities, discipline. There's a whole array of topics as a coach that you have to get into. Did you remember some of that stuff from your mom or maybe your own coaches? Or did you just develop your own style?
I sit there and just kind of chuckle because when I started coaching, I mean, I was so frustrated with golf. I didn't even want to play golf.
Mm.
And, but yet my mom encouraged me to, she's like, you'd be a great coach. I'm like, I don't even like golf right now.
Yeah.
And so she encouraged me to kind of look down that path. And then, I started to think, maybe, but maybe because my mom was my coach, my experience was quite different than most, or maybe my perspective was different. So because I'm my mother's daughter, I'm very stubborn. So maybe I didn't want to always listen to my mom/coach,
mm.
But yeah, she had all this great experience. But so my experience from, you know, with my coach in college, I am not sure if I learned as much as I could have. Because of my stubbornness with my mom. Mm-hmm. When I started coaching, I stepped in and I quickly realized that I had no clue.
Mm.
And so it was, you know, I stepped in as a head coach with no experience, which I thank the athletic director for hiring me, but also I'm like, what was she doing? When I look back, I'm like, why would you ever hire someone to take care of these young women that has no experience in managing people? She's only managed herself and it's been all about me for all those years playing the tour.
But she made the right decision, though.
Well, I mean, things have worked out and they were patient with me, brutally patient. And I started to kind of jump on education and getting, you know, talking to women like Linda Volstead. She was a longtime coach at ASU, and she had seminars and coaching seminars for women. And it was just, you know, it was like, oh, my gosh, this is so what I needed. And just looking for education, looking for support, looking for things that, you know, a process that I just really didn't know. So. And I was a little too stubborn to probably even at that time ask my mom because I really wanted to, I knew that I had to develop my own personality and style with it. I couldn't step in and be my mom.
Mm-hmm. True. What you just said is really, to me, an inspirational point to share with women in any industry because you're able to go into something and, you know, kind of, not knowing what you're doing. I mean, you knew the sport, but there, I'm sure there was an element of fear there. And, you know, I know for me, when I have any fears, I educate myself. And I think, the more I know, the safer I am. I can do this if I educate myself. And I think that is a huge point you just made because, you know, nobody would look at you or hear your story and think that you walked into a coaching job with any question of, you know, but we have those things inside that, you know, as women or, you know, I guess anyone, but, you know, that you're questioning yourself or, you know, how you said, why did they hire me? Well, it's amazing that you would even think that way, but that's what a lot of women don't see, that we all have that in us. And, you know, you chose to go through it, deal with it and educate yourself and be better.
Well, it was, you know, we're creating something right now. It's in the baby stages, but it's, you know, we've just had a roundtable with some women in the community about, you know, helping women coaches stay in coaching, you know, getting coaching and staying coaching. And, you know, there is a difference in how, you know, 36% of men want to lead versus 18% of women want to lead.
Wow.
And that's a pretty big gap right there. I mean, when Title IX was passed, there were 90% female head coaches, and now there's only like 39% female head coaches.
Wow.
And so you would think that these great opportunities were, you know, why are women not staying in coaching? Why are women hard on themselves and think they can't do it?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that, you know, and I guess if you would ask me what I wanted to do in the future, I want to take the great opportunities and the lessons that I've learned and had to go out and learn myself to be able to support, you know, young women in coaching and keep them in there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not a women's liver or anything, but I believe that, you know, you need to have the tools and the empowerment to know that you are the best candidate for the position.
So is it possible women, because it is, you know, unfortunately in the culture, hopefully it's getting better, and I think it is, but you know, the women have not gotten fair treatment or equal treatment at times, of course, over the years. Do you think they're not being supported by their own institution, wherever they're coaching, as well as perhaps the culture itself? Could that be part of it, or is it something else why they aren't staying in coaching as long as...
I mean, I do think that women, you know, have other responsibilities that, you know, if they have kids, I mean, that makes it challenging. But yet, there are women out there that have been CEOs and head coaches and successful and have had children, but they've also had really supportive husbands.
Right.
That they might be the stay-at-home dad, and the fact that we need to make that okay, I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah.
We need to have, you know, my husband supported me to move from Oklahoma to move to Arizona State, and I had the lead job and he didn't. So he supported mm-hmm. me through all these years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he has taken, you know, I don't want to say a backseat, but I mean, he did this for me.
Right.
And I don't know that that is always the case. I think that, you know, there's more females in college than males and in grad schools and med schools. And so, I mean, I think that the times of women earning money are because of their education and their experience. I think that, you know, I think men, younger men are definitely looking at women differently.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is a matter of time, but I also feel that women are afraid to, you know, you're like just grateful to have a job and you don't really want to step out and say, hey, I'm worth more than this.
Right.
You know, women were, I mean, if you were to compare all the things that a successful, you know, woman in business does to accentuate her position, you know, like what you're doing with the radio show, I mean, you're in the real estate business and yet you're doing so much more. I mean, you're kind of, you do that because you want to make a difference. You want to set yourself apart.
Yep.
You have to do additional things.
Yes.
And when you look at what a male would do, are they doing all those things? Are they so driven to get education and set themselves apart? You know, so I did hear a pretty successful man say, you know, we haven't really used our brain power for many, many years because, mm-hmm. you know, half the population is female. We've been stupid to not use that brain power.
Right. And, you know, going back to what you just said, you know, I was raised by a football coach and it was, you know, kind of how you were raised by a coaching mindset. And
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it's something I know I'm part of a mentor group with women in real estate right now that, you know, whether it's golfing, real estate, whatever you're doing, to constantly have, you know, supportive people. I'm not married, so I don't have that person to go home to, but I have other people that can come into my life and say, hey, you can do this, keep going, you know, and you're right. We do have to set ourselves apart. Where I personally don't, you know, live working in the corporate world before real estate, I saw it firsthand. I would be, you know, working till whatever time and going home and doing this and doing that. And they weren't having to do that. They didn't, they really didn't have to prove themselves on that level. But I certainly felt that I did. And and it's okay. I mean, I think, again, being raised with that mindset of, hey, you're here to take care of yourself and you have to, you know, there's not, nobody's going to save you. But at the same time, you know, I just think it's, I think it's really important to keep the coaching going, not just in golf, but in anything, just that we need that, you know, mentors and to know, like you said, we can do it.
Well, I absolutely feel it's important to, you know, just, it's even as simple as encouraging someone. I mean, you don't have to take a big chunk of your time and you know, mentor someone. I mean, it's being a mentor is fantastic, but just to say, you know, gosh, you would be so good at that. And you're like, really? Because the women are like, you know, you just kind of tend to beat ourselves down and tell us that we're not quite good enough.
Yes.
And I think that the more that you can, you know, just encourage that, you know, by simple encouragement, go for that, apply for that, do that. You never know. I mean, take the experience of the interview, you know, get better at showing your stuff and really, your goal is to be the best candidate, not that you're going to be the best woman, but you're going to be the best candidate.
Right.
And, you know, if you start to look at, you know, what Susie's done on this side and all the education and what Johnny's done on this side, Susie's going to kick ass.
Yeah.
Pardon my French.
And I speak French. No, parlez-vous français. You know, but what's remarkable, what I'm hearing, Melissa, what you're saying is that when you got into coaching, you weren't sure that much, but you developed. But you developed beyond just a coach of golf. It sounds like you developed the you know, strength and self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
You motivate, you influence, you create values beyond golf. Would you say that about yourself? Because it sounds that's what you're saying.
Well, this is where, I mean, I've kind of been on this. What coaching has done for me personally is that it has forced me to look at myself. It has forced me to look at my strengths. It's forced me to look at my weaknesses. I have strengths and I still have weaknesses. And I met a lady here in town, and her name is Carlette Patterson, and she runs Patterson Sports Ventures. And she has created a job that's called Sport Life Coaching. And she and I connected, and she resonated with me because, you know, she was an athlete in college. She was a swimmer at ASU. You know, could have been close to the Olympics, and life took a different turn. But, you know, she basically, you know, she does corporate, she does personal, she does, but her goal is to have a sports life coach on every bench, on every team. Because, and I totally believe this, because when I said earlier that I was so connected to my score, that my whole personal self-image and self-esteem was related to my results. And how unhealthy that was. When she and I talked, we're almost like, oh my gosh, this is where I was, and this is where many athletes get. And, you know, to really look at the in three dimensions is the personal, the professional, and the philanthropic side of a person's life. Because you're like, why am I here? What's my purpose? And I'm really in this journey right now, and have been the last 2 years, with really, you know, taking those three dimensions of my life and wanting to be significant in all three of them. And it's really put me on a good path, a good game plan, good goals. Just like, you know, you would have in sports, you'd want to have, you know, a good game plan. I mean, right now I'm, you know, those fears still come up. I mean, I just coached a team to missing the 24th consecutive national championship at ASU. Our team didn't make it for the first time in 23 years. And I'm kind of reeling from it right now. And I'm feeling grief. I mean, I just feel like I've let so many people down, and myself and the team, and, you know, how can I break the streak? And but yet, you know, we've been through tough times before, and I've been through tough times before, and, you know, I look next year that we've got the talent to come back and win the same.
Yeah.
So it's just, it happens in sports, and, mm-hmm. you know, I just know that I feel like I'm on a good path personally, and I've had support, and I've had help, and I've had coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It has happened. And, I mean, it doesn't relieve the pain so much, but it might lessen the pain somehow. I mean, even the great coach John Wooden, UCLA basketball, you know, his 10 victories winning the NCAA championship. But one of his better teams, he learned a lesson that. I think it was his ninth or tenth victory with Bill Walton. I mean, one of a superior team. But, you know, he was one that just taught fundamentals and really let the players play. But he learned that year that he probably should have called a few timeouts, and he lost. And with that phenomenal team, but he came back the next year with a less talented team and won. And so I think we all learn lessons, and it might feel like a setback, but it's really probably, you know, everything's a blessing in disguise somewhere.
Well, I appreciate that, and probably some maturity is helping me through this, that, you know, it's not the end of the world. There's a lot worse things going on out there. I have a ton to be grateful for. You know, we run a great program. We teach our kids great life lessons. We expect a lot of them. They're outstanding students. I just got the grades right before I, called in, and our cum was like a 3.65 this semester. So, I mean, just so many great things to be proud of, and one blip and one blur is not going to define us.
Yeah, no doubt.
And or define me. I mean, it's, you know, people around our athletic department don't even know what to say to me, and I'm like, it's okay. I'm gonna be fine. We're gonna be great again.
Yeah.
So I do look at all the, you know, the setbacks and the things that happen the next year. So, you know, it's just how you have to choose to set your mind, and then they're a very big education piece right now, and feeling very motivated. So that's a good barometer of why I still love coaching. It's how do I feel when in defeat? And if I still love it and still motivated, I'm staying in it. So,
and that's a great lesson for all our listeners, and in any industry, whether you're a lawyer, business consultant, a teacher, everyone's going to have setbacks, and the key is the mindset. So that, I mean, this is great to end the show this way, because that's a message that's invaluable, and we really appreciate you for coming on our show today.
It's been my pleasure, and you know, I'm just really thrilled to make my home in Phoenix and do good things in the community, and Phoenix has helped me become a better person. So thank you, guys.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, and we'll talk soon.
Go Devils.
Go Devils.
All right,
yeah.
Absolutely. ASU. Thanks again, Melissa. And that was Melissa Llewellyn, the head coach, golf, ASU. Can't get bigger than that. Great golf out here, I got to tell you.
I really, really like her mindset. And,
great mindset.
Everything she had to say. And obviously, we know she's going to continue and do great things, because she has that right mental attitude, and that's what it takes.
Yeah, and the passion. Why don't we take a quick break right now? When we come back, we'll wrap up the show with another topic, a topic that will certainly interest you. This is Empowering Women from Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona. We'll be right back. Dave Isaac alongside Tara Elves. I didn't say your last name yet, but you said hello. That was so cute. That was adorable.
I'm over here wanting to dance. We have Pharrell on.
I don't know who Pharrell is.
Pharrell? You don't know who Pharrell is?
You know what's awesome? There's a game on the Wii that has that song, and then you follow around. You follow Pharrell and the other guy
while
they dance, and
oh,
yeah, it's pretty fun.
Pharrell is a producer and an artist, and he's actually right now one of the coaches on the Voice, the show, The Voice.
Oh, really?
He's just a cool guy. I like him.
A cool guy. You almost said dude.
He's a cool
I don't know
guy.
The difference. Anyway, but again, thank you to Melissa Llewellyn.
She was amazing.
ASU head coach, golf, phenomenal, and really beyond just a head coach. I mean, it's, you could almost say part of it's life coaching, too. And
That's what I liked about her. She definitely implements the mental and emotional part of coaching into the sport, and that's such a big part for women, especially.
Huge. And yeah, so if you want to hear a replay, definitely breakradioshow.com archives under Empowering Women on this date, May 15th. Can you believe it's the 15th of May?
No.
You can?
Time is flying.
How does that happen?
It just does. And, you know, I have to say, though, just this is totally off the subject, but...
That's how we love it.
On Saturday, a friend called me, had a VIP ticket to go see that medium, Allison DeBose. She's from Phoenix. Allison DeBose, I think is how you say it. DeBose, DeBose. Anyhow, she had a TV show called The Medium.
Oh.
Okay, so she did a little private, you know, maybe... just a few hundred people reading.
Really?
And she had people stand up, and she contacted people that had passed away on the other side.
Like
and
Don Edwards, I think.
Yes, yes, yes.
Over the, what is it, whatever his show was.
I don't know what his show, but yes.
Another
see, or like the
or
like
something.
The Long Island Medium, the same thing. But when you said, you know, time passes and then we all are gone, but apparently, according to her, everything that you love that is living right now, when you pass to the other side, you will eventually, you know, when they pass, you will see them again.
Wow, really?
Which was kind of, I mean, we can all believe whatever, you know, we choose to believe. But I like to believe that way because...
I mean, I'll see my TV.
No, living things.
Kidding.
it was interesting. It was really interesting. And it kind of, you know... things like that give you a little bit of hope, and
I know
it helps me to not have any fear of you know, passing or anything. But it was interesting. She really, there was no way she could have known these things about these people,
and she nailed it.
Oh, it was unreal, and it was a small room. It was very.
You didn't offer anything.
I felt it was Mother's Day weekend, and I felt like it was really for people who lost, like, a mother or a child or, you know, so I didn't, like, raise my hand and say, what, am I going to meet my soulmate? You know, like, I didn't think my problems were very
But
important.
Not on the other side, on this side.
On this side, but she can talk to you because she connects with your guides or your spirit.
Oh,
you know,
so
spiritual.
She can say what's going on now.
She can read you right now, but based on spirits. But she had people's family members coming in, and... it was really interesting, and they were so specific, so specific. She knew how people died. She knew. I mean, it was really fascinating because she's communicating supposedly with them. Anyway,
I saw someone like that. I'm trying to. I'm going to look.
The reason I brought that up is you said how time's passing, and it is. And all of a sudden, you know, you just, like I always say, life is so short. We have to do everything we want to do right now, and we just have to be happy and. You know, we all go through hard times, and you just don't want to stay there too long. Just like in golf, you don't want to stay on the low. You get right back on the saddle and keep going.
Yeah. We are the champions. What is that? That sounds like a
slow clap that starts. You know, we had a few people start clapping, and then the rest of them go.
Oh, that's what it is?
Yeah.
I did go to, and I can't remember, he's actually well-known, to the Celebrity Theater, and I saw this guy, and he knew answers from the other side. And what was his name? I'm trying to look him up right now, and he's not, John Edwards comes up first. And he's probably the most well-known, probably because of his TV show. But anyway, I'll try to find out before we're off there. But so some of the topic we're going to talk about, I think we have a few minutes, to talk about that is divorce. What's happening in that arena?
Yeah, and you know, the whole increase in midlife divorce and you know, the statistics show that actually 66% of midlife divorce are initiated by women.
By women? 66%?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that because I'm wondering that men are just procrastinators and women want to get things going, but they endure marriage longer where once they're done, they're done?
Well, the study I was reading, they had talked to a psychotherapist who works specifically with divorces. I had done a study, and many of them, women, felt that they were dealing with emotional abuse. And, you know, you get married young, you know, you don't even realize you're being emotionally abused because somebody's telling you little things like, oh, you know, you really could lose 10 pounds.
That's abuse?
Well, eventually, yes, because eventually you start to believe these little...
I guess it depends how you say that. Like if the woman asks, like, do you think I could lose some pounds? Well, you should say no.
Well, well, I mean, of course, but I mean, it's just, it's like they whittle, a man can easily
whittle their self-esteem away.
Or a woman. I mean, it could go either direction. This study just was, you know, dealing with women specifically. But yeah, it can whittle you down. And over the years, you know, you don't even realize how much you kind of lose who you are. And you've been married. I know I was married 15 years. So
wow, that's a long time.
A long time. And you know, I got divorced for other reasons. And then you look back and go, wait, I didn't even know. I didn't realize until I did get divorced that some of the things that were taking place on both sides were happening. You know, you didn't even realize that, you know, maybe I was doing the same thing in other ways, you know, or you can't do that, or, you know, you have to do this. And the things we start to do in a relationship.
It's unconscious sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I got divorced, I never said I got divorced. I said I successfully completed my marriage. That's how I looked at it. I took a spin, like a political spin, and did it that way. How's that sound to you?
That's good. I like that. but, yeah, you know, you just... I think maybe by, you know, our age, where, you know, I'm in my 40s, you start to see.
And I'm a little bit older.
Oh, just a little bit. And you just start to see, you know, these sudden, what appears to be a sudden, like, oh, my husband just left, or, oh, my wife just walked out with the guy at work. Well, those things were progressing over the years, and we don't, when we're
you
in.
You don't see it.
We don't see it. And it's
like,
you know,
a frog being in cold water. And they slowly heat the water up, and it never knows to get out.
Yeah.
But if you put a frog in burning hot water, it would
jump out. Yeah.
But it's a slow cooker, which is unfortunate.
That's a horrible analogy. I feel so sad right now for that frog.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And unless you like frog legs, but the thing is, then it's cooked already. So, yeah, I think I'm a big believer in wellness checks. Don't wait until... You know, there's a lot of things going on. Why not go when things are going good to, like, a therapist?
Well,
I don't know what's wrong with that. But that's a good idea, right?
But that is a good idea. But, you know, people get busy with life. They have kids. Everyone's, you know, trying to survive and make money. You know, whatever.
A lot of the hustle and the bustle.
Right. And, you know, to say, well, everything's great. People just, you know, innately don't try and fix something that's not broken, usually.
That's true.
They're not as proactive with a... You know, whereas you would be preventative with your health, but you might not
be with
your relationship.
That's a good point. And what I think we should do is have a topic maybe next time on how many, married men asking, like, women out.
We don't know anything about that. I've never.
Well, no one's asked me out, but not a married man.
Yeah, I definitely think that's, and going, you know, back to the divorce. Well, a lot of people, I've seen this happen many times where.
Well, not a single man either. I just realized that
they don't get divorced.
Neither.
They don't want to get divorced.
Or married women. All right, I win. I win.
Wait,
that's...
wait, we have someone on there. Wait. Oh, Dave's ex-wife.
Dave, you're not funny.
That sounds like Lucifer.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh,
she's
okay.
Off the line.
Maybe the... All right.
I don't think I can even remember what I was just about to say.
It was hypnotic.
Sorry.
The hypnotic technique that has worked. And
okay, so no, but...
I just clarifying. No, I... yeah, I'm married.
Yeah, anyway. You're married. Okay. Yes, yes.
We think so. Yeah.
Right. To a wonderful, lovely lady.
It's true, by the way.
Yes, she's amazing. But no, just how much people don't, you know, if they are unhappy in a relationship, then you'll see the people who do, you know, that's why when you just brought up married men asking women out, well, they've got one foot out the door. Things aren't going that great. They're not feeling like they did 10 years ago or whatever. Oh, let me just test the waters. Oh, I find something. I get somebody. Temporary out. And then they're out and they destroy it. It's just
crazy.
It's crazy.
Well, there's that. I think what happens too is, a lot of people, they can't be alone in a way.
That's what it is.
What normally should happen, let's say a relationship doesn't work out. That's fine. It happens. But you don't have to rush just to pick someone. They're not, you know, they're just looking like, oh, I don't want to be alone. But I think also with sometimes maybe with married guys or even married women, there might be a thrill in there in the sense where their marriage might actually be going okay, but they're just quite there or very insecure.
No, absolutely. It's either an insecurity or there's like, you know, like you said, the thrill of it.
Yeah.
But... I mean, it never goes well, right? It never ends well.
Never.
And, that's a whole nother topic. But definitely is a contributing factor to divorce.
We should explore that, though.
You know, within the last hour during the show, there was 2,000 divorces that were filed.
Really?
Just in the West Coast.
Is that many?
Yeah.
Did you just Google that?
No.
Are you just making this up?
I am.
Okay, oh, cool. I wouldn't doubt it.
This is a serious show, and this is all we want facts here.
We will have facts for next month's show.
We'll have a survey.
But it is crazy, though, that what happens. But like you said, Tara, a lot of people get married very young now, you know, and even in the past. But it's different. There's so much out there. You know, you get married, and then let's say late 20s, early 30s, you might start to say, oh, wait, I want to get back out and party and stuff. And I think there's a little of that, too. I think just everything combined is coming in.
I mean, it is hard. Being committed and married can be hard for some people. I mean, for me, it was not. I was, you know, that was it. I got married. That was it. I would not have gotten divorced with other circumstances not coming into play. But, some people struggle with it. And, the key is go to ASU and have fun. Like I did.
There you go.
And when
what
you're
does
young,
that mean? Have fun.
Well,
like
I mean, remember ASU used to have that reputation for being a party school.
Used to.
I don't know what their statistics are now, but anyhow, they have a good golf program.
Yeah.
Female golf.
And they have parties.
But they have parties. So I guess it is that you know if you really do. You know, enjoy your youth and. Maybe, that was, for me, that was the key. You know, my dad always said, don't get into a relationship until you are out of school. And it was kind of a really good advice because
absolutely.
I got through college, I dated a ton and had fun. And
a
then
ton? What does that mean?
A little, just, I had fun.
Okay.
And then when I got,
that could be a topic.
Then when I met my ex-husband, I knew, it was easy. It wasn't like I missed out on something or I didn't live, That's
we're going to have a talk, young lady.
No,
I'm kidding. What? You didn't what?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Off the air talk.
We have film. Okay. So just kidding. We don't have film. But that is a good topic. And we'll get into more of that in a serious manner where divorce, well, I think, I'm just going to leave it at this. And then that probably wraps up the show. But it's 10:10 right now, by the way. Right. The thing is, 10:10's my birthday. That's why I mention it. 10:10. Now, the thing is I think, and I don't think they can do this, but it's so easy to get married. I think they should make it hard to get married, like tests and yes. and a battery of psychological things and continuous education. They have it for
that is a really good idea.
Yeah, because it's so easy in, and then sort of not hard. Well, it's sort of hard to get out. I mean, it's expensive to get out.
Yeah, it is. And no, that's a really good point. I mean, I did. You know, before I got married, we did some classes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it doesn't make it. I don't think that would have made or break. Broken things. It was just more of, if you're ready, are you ready? You know, and maybe that's what it is.
Psychologically,
are you ready?
Do you have criteria? Do you know what your purpose is? Why get married? Some people just think.
They don't even know why they're getting
married.
Yeah,
they don't. Yeah. I mean, you wake up, you go to Vegas one day and you had a few drinks, you wake up and you're married.
And it's not,
sometimes.
But it goes also to the point that the value of marriage is different than it once was. It's not such a, at one time, it wasn't so.
You get married at 14 and you die at 18 in the days of short lifespans.
And that was Dave's original day, but he has fought it off. He has lived well. He was around when the Cubs last won their World Series in 1908.
So the question is.
Dave, it's your ex-wife again. We disconnected the call.
Stop.
The question is, and then we could end on this, the movie Twins.
Love it.
And I know what Greg will say. Which twin would I be? No. Oh, God, he's going to answer.
Well, of course he'd be Danny DeVito.
I knew he would
got
say
the,
that.
What's it called, the ponytail in the
back.
I
wanted to be Arnold.
Never.
Hate to break it to you.
Yeah, it's DeVito.
He's making the movie again, Terminator. He's back. Oh,
Also been talk of twins, too, and I think they were close. I'm not sure what's going on
now. That'd be
great.
Yeah,
hopefully. You got to get it done soon. You know,
I liked it. It was a great movie, wasn't it? Anyway, Tara, it's a little bit of off-topic, but that's
today.
How we roll today. We had a great topic today.
You know what? It's
today.
The weather. We're just all in a different mood here.
Waiting for the rain. Yeah.
Rain.
It's going to rain, by the way. I see some clouds right now. But again, thank you to Melissa Llewellyn, head golf coach for ASU. Can't get better than that. Delightful woman, excellent golfer, amazing coach, mm-hmm. and a remarkable person. And perfect for empowering women.
Yes. Thank you.
And that wraps it up. Tara, it's nice seeing you.
Nice seeing you.
Next month, I don't know what day that will be. What day will that be? June. I'm going to check it out before the music stops. We're going to see what day is the next Empowering Women. Well, it's actually, I think, June 5th.
Oh, yeah, coming up.
That's right. June 5th because...
Hey.
Yes.
Yes. 5th. So June 5th, another episode of Empowering Women. Look for us everywhere. And this is Dave Isaac and Tara
Alves
signing off. Have a great week.